Accession number 28411, Reel 2.
On that parade in New Guinea, we hadn't been out of, we'd been relieved by the 16th Brigade, and we were sort of catching our breath and getting a bit of decent tucker in. So anyway, all we knew was that we had to parade and Blamey wanted to inspect us. And we thought he'd probably come along and say, well, well done, you've done a good job, all that crap. We bloody well know we did. And all he did was abuse us. Now, the old bastard, girth on him like that. And he came up in a jeep and he took the march past. No, he spoke to us first. And accused us of not being fit and running away, of course. He reckoned we didn't stand and fight. Well, he didn't look at the casualties too much. And that was when, he's only from here to where your bike is or something like that, and there were mutterings and murmurings, and I can't repeat what they bloody said on here. And he just went on about it. And really, I think it only needed one bloke to break ranks or do something. There would have been a riot. That's what they thought of him. Because Potts and the whole lot, the whole blokes that are up there, they did their best. But it's not much good, you know, at Butcher's Hill, where what... Well, I'll finish Blamey first. Anyway, when he said you weren't fit and you've got to be fit, there was this old bugger there like a tennis ball with a couple of eyes in. And he said he'll take the salute or he'll march past or something or other. And he went from here to the other side of the road, I suppose, in a jeep. Wouldn't even walk. Probably couldn't. And no one looked at him when they marched past, that I can recall anyway. And then afterwards he called the officers together, and that's when he sacked Arnold Potts and our CO, then Albert Caro, and our padre, a chap by the name of Bert, B-U-R-T, that was his surname, a wonderful bloke of the, not uppity, or, you know, with God all the time. He exploded, and he got fired on the spot. God knows where poor old Bert ended up. Freddie Burt, that's right. And there was another bloke by the name of Alf Robinson had a bullet through there and he...
Through his neck?
Yeah, through his neck. And it was all stitched up inside and out. And he had a very cracky boy. He was a major. He lost his temper with Blamey. It was in a tent. We didn't see it. And all blew all his stitches to get back to hospital. But... there's books about that. I don't know whether you've read them. Probably younger generation wouldn't be interested, probably. But that's what we think of Mr. Blamey. Oh, and all he was trying to do is, we believe now, reading the books and looking back and just trying to protect himself and jealous of what MacArthur used to tell him. It was a great rivalry between the two, apparently. But not a very pleasant interlude, but yeah, that's all part of history, I suppose.
I think it's a very interesting part of the second 16th story, and we'll get to speak to you possibly a little bit more about that. Let's talk, though, about what the initial training was like.
In Northern, pretty basic, you know, usual infantry things of going the rifle you will. Day one, they taught you how to aim a rifle, for instance, which is, you know, a great laugh, but there you go. Those sort of things. And how to change step and bloody drill, route marches, drill, about turns and all that crap. Of course, there was a gas drill and had gas masks in those days and... platoon formations and drill, then company, then battalion, We had to have a battalion parade every morning, and the bloody old, not bloody old, our CO, Baxter Cox, used to come and inspect one company at a time. And, you know, look down our rifles and all that jazz, see if they were clean and no buttons undone. And anyway, it was all part of Army discipline and routine. And we used to go out on field manoeuvres, you know, sections at a time. Three sections in the platoon, and you'd have one to six and attacking up a gully and another one defending and all that business, and pretty basic infantry training, really. And it wasn't until we got to Palestine that we got into the, you know, brigade manoeuvres and all that jazz. But
what did you think of your initial equipment?
Well, I didn't think anything of it then, but looking back, it was bloody awful. You know, the tunics, the World War One has-beens, you know, handovers. We used to, what we trained in or live in, is a giggle suit.
That's
right. And the giggle suit was just a plain khaki thing of, well, I don't know how to describe it. It was just buttoned up the front and khaki trousers and boots and a giggle hat. It was only on Sunday church service or going on leave or occasionally we'd have a parade, march through Perth, of course, we're in our uniform, but they were all World War One uniforms, and they were, looking back, hopeless. I got I don't know why or how, but I got hold of a battle suit, a Tommy battle suit, which is much more when in the Middle East, and I used to live in the bloody thing. We had it all issued with them. I was given a Tommy gun and a Tommy battle dress, as I call it, what the Brits wore, built round here, no flaps and so forth, appropriate pockets. But, the rifles were 303s from World War One, and we had, what's the Vickers machine guns, I think? World War One's all. Reliving what happened, no doubt, in World War One, I suppose, in that sense of the uniforms and so forth. I think the discipline was good. I think we ought to have it now. Conscription for a year or two for these young blacks, some of these young tearaways. What else can I tell?
What did it feel like being in the Army?
Oh, it feels like being in the Army. Well, very appropriate, I suppose, is the word. It was, you know, war was so much in the air and on everyone's minds and discussions and, you know, in the papers, of course. But you were just part of that scene. We knew what was going to happen. We were going to go overseas somewhere and never thought about the blokes back in Civvy Street. I didn't. You know, you sort of.
You said that you didn't think of the chaps in Civvy Street, but my impression is that once you're in uniform, you felt pretty good.
Oh, sure. Oh, yeah. Quite. Funny feeling. You really can't. Gotta turn your mind back 60 years, a long time, isn't it? It's all. Part of the world, you know, part of every day. There's a war and you're going away and doing the right thing, and it's all a big adventure too, I suppose. We're all together.
Well, you were mentioning earlier on that Poland was the beginning of the phony war, and obviously there
Well, the phony that. War was, to me, was when Germany first invaded Poland and war was declared. And there was the Maginot Line and the whatever the other one was. And they were just pot shots at each other. There wasn't we didn't know what was going to happen. They were all going to, you know, chuck it in and go back to being normal again. But when the Germans invaded the lowlands and came round the bottom end of into France, that's when as I understood, when the real war started.
All right, well, let's talk about what it was like when you heard of Dunkirk.
Now, Dunkirk was in about May, wasn't it? Yeah, that's when I joined up in May. But our battalion was being formed then.
Italy declares war as well?
No, yeah, well, I never I don't know if I can say that. Never, that didn't concern me personally because you had to catch them to knock them over. As that was proved in Syria, in Libya later on. But no, Italy coming into the war didn't. But it all signalled, you know, that this is it. The phony war's on, we were involved, and you're with us in it. But yeah, in Dunkirk, we heard about it, but it obviously wasn't at our doorstep. And again, it was the start of the war, particularly when Dunkirk, of course, but since that invaded the lowlands, that was it. We knew there was no good hanging back or thinking about it or chatting about it or diddle-diddle-diddle. We just had to into it.
How was the German might seen at that time?
Oh, pretty strong. Yeah.
We had Panzer tanks, for God's
sake. Yeah, that's right. Well, that's what I went into. Went into the Belgium and Holland. Oh, no, they were... I must admit, I was surprised. You know, not a very mature mind, I suppose, 21.
Well, some people say that Germany at that point had won the war, particularly if it hadn't stopped the panda tanks or whatever.
No.
You could have cleaned up
never
the beach of Europe.
Pardon?
Some historians believe they could have cleaned the whole expeditionary force up off the beach if he wanted to.
Well, I'm sure he could have. I say that now. But at the time, we didn't know. I didn't know really what was involved in invading England. I suppose just that Britain was in a hell of a lot of trouble. But I don't ever remember thinking that that's the end of the war, because you know France was. Well, I don't know. They were bloody useless anyway, France. But no, it never entered my head that was the end of the war. The bloody start of it, actually.
All right, well, let's talk then about that time on, and we'll discuss what was involved with your training as you developed and started thinking about going away.
So you were referring to Norman, and what I thought of the war then, or what?
How your training would develop until the point where you would be sent away.
Oh, hard to be explicit about that. I mean, I was in the army. We were training in Northern. We knew we were going to go away somewhere. I think we probably had an idea about the Middle East then. And it's just a matter of when we were told to go. As it happened, I don't think I remember hearing much about the war in Northern. You know, you'd hear about I wasn't in the northern Dunkirk. I remember hearing about the the bombing of London and the bombing of Germany and little. We didn't get much news there. We had no radios or anything. And you know, it was a matter of doing what you were told to do, and it was all pretty basic looking back. And come end of September, we had a march through Perth, whole battalion. We knew then that it must be close to us going away. And we went away on, October. And it was all part of what we expected. And all, you know.
What was that period like? First of all, the march through, and then... heading off. What was that like?
Oh, very exciting. Very exciting. You were, we trained for, I suppose, a couple of weeks. The march through Perth was, I'm guessing, something like 2 miles. It mightn't have been that far, I don't know. You zigzagged through and ended up down by Government House, where the governor took the salute or someone did. And of course, in those days, you marched with your rifle, a 303, which is a damn heavy rifle, plus a bayonet stuck on there, which is heavy, and your left hand at the slack. And because it was such a long march through Perth, we were at one stage going to train to change arms. In other words, you change this, holding the rifle there, to holding the rifle there, and there's a drill for it. And we practiced this. The old Baxter Cox was very absolutely adamant that we'd do it as a battalion. You know, none of the straggly business and so forth. And we trained a couple of weeks, route marches and changing this arms and little. When we got to Perth, Baxter Cox, the CO, never opened his mouth. And this bloody arm is just about... We didn't change arms at all. And, you know, there's a hell of a weight up there with a bayonet on and so forth. But apart from that, I've got some photographs of it. It stirred you up a bit, I suppose. Everyone's on the side there, as indeed any parade would, really, for a young bloke. And I suppose within a fortnight, we're on Aquitania going to the Middle East.
Right, well, let's talk about what it was like to finally be heading off.
Well, we were told, round about that time, when we went to Northern, we had a second World War colour patch. And they had the field grey background, which is the second AIF, and then the shape of it was donated, of course, to the divisions. We were a diamond, which was the 7th Division, and then a battalion colour patch, which was brown over purple, I think, or blue or something, in a diamond. And just before we went away, they decided to let each battalion, I presume the artillery and the like were the same, I don't know. We were given the 1st Battalion's colour patch, which was being in an earlier division. The 1st Division was rectangular, which is the same as our 1st Division, 2nd World War, 6th Division. So we had a diamond, I've got one here, with the old battalion, 1st Battalion colour patch on it. So it was a rectangular white over navy blue on a diamond background. And we were given those and told about, what was the night before our march through Perth? We were handed out and we had to show them on ourselves an inch below there from the epaulet, sewn on there and there and on a... I don't know if they had a pokery then. And I remember one bloke in our hut. He sewed his on. When he went to put it on, it was on his elbow. Anyway, that's we got a colour patch, and we knew then we'd be going. At any rate, we were told, or we knew, we were told by the packing up and sea kits and so on, that we're on our way, and we were told the night before that we were going. Great secret. No one was to tell anyone. Of course, everybody in Perth knew about before we did. And we hopped on a train in Northern, down to Frio, and there were people lining every station. And here we were, theoretically not supposed to tell anyone. And when we got down there, we got on a tender. There was the Aquitania, Mauritania, and the Queen Mary out there, full of troops that come from Sydney. And we got on the Aquitania. Our whole brigade was on the Aquitania, which is about 10,000 troops. No, 5,000. About 5,000. That took us to the Middle East. And that was very exciting then, of course.
Well, let's talk about getting on board the Aquitania. What was the departure like? I mean, crowds of people?
There were a lot of people fenced back there. And theoretically, of course, there wasn't going to be anyone there except the army blokes. But, no, we couldn't communicate with them. We'd wave to them. And I remember coming through Perth and Claremont and all the way down from Northern. People knew we were on the train going away. And that was... My parents by that time were living in Albany, so I didn't have anyone there, but plenty of others who I knew, parents, Perth Station, absolutely chock-a-block for those days, was. And, it was exciting. We got down there. The battalion had a mascot, a dog by the name of, I'll think of it in a minute.
That's okay.
And he was a stray that just, I don't know how they got hold of him, he was in Northam, Dasher. They put three pips on his collar, Captain Dasher. And he just lived in the battalion in Northam, and they used to go into Northam, they'd put a saucer in the bar when they were drinking, and Dasher would go and lap it up, and I think get half full, by the look of him anyway. Yeah. And he'd come out with his route marches, not all the time, but he was a member of the battalion. Couldn't go away, of course. We weren't allowed to bring him with us. So a chap by the name of Joe Cosgrove, who was a cook, stuck him in a kit bag and didn't declare him, of course. And he got out to the Aquitania and they discovered that Joe had this dog with him. We'd gone on the tent and gone out to Gage Rads. And of course, it's bloody hell to play. This dog's got to go back. And Joe was pretty beefy for being in the army, but he was a cook. Pretty rough, but that doesn't matter. Anyway, he broke his ankle delivering the dog back to the authorities. So Joe and the dog didn't go away with us. There was the 2nd 14th from Victoria and the 2nd 27th from Adelaide on the Aquitania, and we were the 3rd Battalion of that brigade. And we met these blokes for the first time, just associated with them. And off we went. We were escorted by HMAS Perth cruiser. And of course, three big ships, they never zigzagged then because they were too fast for the subs. The big ships were all chock-a-block. I think the whole 7th Division was on that convoy because the Queen Mary was taking a lot more troops and so was the Mauritania. We had 5,000 of us, all the 7th Division.
What were conditions like on board for you?
On the Aquitania, good. Good. Well, it was an old pre-war Atlantic passenger ship. The officers and gentlemen, of course, had all the top part. I really can't remember much about it. I remember that I was a corporal then. I really can't remember whether I'm sure we would have slept in a cabin. I can remember much more about the next ship. But it was pretty easy going there. It was pretty hard you'd have lectures and we were going to Bombay, as it turned out, and before we got there we got lectures about where to go, where not to go, and there's where all the brothels were, there's a place called Grantsted. No one's to go down there. Out of bounds, taboo. Of course the whole bloody battalion went down there to have a look. Oh, you wouldn't have gone in a million years. Women behind bars, they were poor creatures. They were poor buggers. But everyone went down to have a look because it was out of bounds. But we had lectures on the Middle East and boat drill and if there's a plane came over and all that jazz. Lectures, but we had a lot of time. We had PT, of course. But I really can't remember. The conditions were all right, considering. But when we got to Bombay, it was, of course, my first foreign port. I remember the sun was just getting up. We couldn't possibly. And a huge red bull. Bombay was hot, muggy, and the air wasn't clean at all. Of course, we were out. Too big a ship to get into to dock. And this huge red sun was coming out. Gosh, it's the size of a house. Well, anyway, we're out there for about 3 days, I think. And we got leave. We had a day. and found a place where there's Australian beer. Of course, went down and had a look at Grant Street and up in a Gary. Generally, you know, had a look at a foreign city. And then we were the Holbrigade, I think. Don't know what happened to the rest of them. Went to a place called Deer Lally. There's a British army camp there. It's about 120 miles inland from Bombay. Went by train and, of course, saw a lot of the hinterland and through some pretty hilly country and a lot of poverty. I'll never forget the poverty there. And we were there for 10 days. And nearby was a place called, wait a minute, Deer Lally, is it? Puna. Puna is where we were in. Deer Lally is the out-of-bounds place. There was a mosque of some sort. Probably a Muslim, I don't know. Anyway, no one wants to go there. Taboo, it was all, you know, sacred ground, anyway. What happens? Not all of them, most of the town goes out and has a look at it. And there was a bit of a riot there.
Presumably, if you hadn't been told about these things, that's the point. You never would have gone.
If you'd had reverse psychology, yeah. But if you put a place out of bounds, the first thing the bloody city makers want to do is go and have a look at it. And we had 10 pleasant days there with the Brits. There was a lot of Brits there. Well, we did a bit of try and keep ourselves fit, a bit of PT, and not too much root mass. Actually, it was a bit of a bludge, actually. There were one or two Indian villages around, which we used to wander around and have a look at. We were there for 10 days and back to Bombay. And we were then put in, because we were getting into the war zone, we were going up through the Red Sea to the war zone, we were in smaller ships, and our battalion was in an Indian crewed British ship called the Rajula. It was Indian crewed, but it was a British ship. And that was a shocker. It really was. It was all the ORs, and I was one of them. We slept down below, because we were into the tropics, in hammocks that degutted all the bottom, because the officers and gentlemen were upstairs, of course, and the food was dreadful. In fact, there was a strike on, refused to eat. It used to be mainly green bread, green with mould, and baked beans and bloody old scruffy bacon that came from God knows where. We used to get this time, and in fact, I've got a menu of it here. I think I have, yeah. The food is awful. You know, so once the stomach gets affected, things go off pretty quickly. And that wasn't very pleasant, that one, except the fact that we were going up the Red Sea, and I remember one bloke telling me tomorrow we'll be within the ranges of the Italian bombers, fighters, whatever they were. They were in Ethiopia then. And that made a bit of an effect on me, I suppose others, the fact that I was really in a war zone. Not much of a one. Then we got to... and the other... There were, of course, we were in a convoy, and that was zigzag all the time then. And I think probably the whole division was in that convoy. It was a pretty big one anyway. We were one of them. Just our battalion. They were smaller ships. And we eventually got to a place in the middle of the Suez Canal called Deer Lally. Now, wait a minute, that's not right. What am I talking about? I just passed the Bitter Lakes. Think of it a minute. And we got off the ship there. And there was a camp there. This would be, I suppose, midday. I've forgotten now. That sort of time. El Cantar was the name of the place. So where there's an up and down bridge, we can get a pontoon across the canal. Egypt. Anyway, we had a member of feed of spinny sausages. Do you know what they are? There's a chap named Spinny in the British Army in Palestine who stayed there on after the war. And he was a butcher by trade, and he made sausages. He found he was not too sure how he led into all this, but this is the story, which is true. He stayed there making and selling sausages. And he got a contract for the, well, I suppose the British Army when World War II came along. And they were supplying sausages to all the forces there. And we had a feed of them. They were bloody good sausages too. After that bloody Rajula, they had a bit of sand in it, but they were good. Spinny sausages. And then we got 8 to a cattle truck to go into our camp, which was, oh, I don't know, about 4 hours, 5, 6, 8, I don't know what it was. It was evening anyway. With all our gear, I tell you what, there was no room in a cattle truck. With all our gear, our sea bags, our kit bags, our rifles, whole bloody lot. Great coats. Anyway, we were piled in there, and off we went, and the bloody thing had square wheels. God, it was a rough trip. We always reckoned they had spare wheels. It was not like sitting on a... You know, these trains were bad enough during the war, but they were shocking. And we got to our camp, Duelist camp,